Hello, everyone. Welcome to another of our Artemis Live interviews. And for this latest episode, we're going to focus in on a subject that is not one of my specialties, but I've got two people with me who hopefully can help us to parse some of the issues that are currently going on. And this is all around inflation, which is big news currently. Some economists seem to be expecting a sustained period of price increases and inflationary pressures around the entire world, with obviously the pandemic one of the factors, but there are many other issues that have caused this. Some are specific to location or region of the world that you're in. And of course, for the insurance, reinsurance, and insurance-linked securities market, materials, labor, and other costs have in some cases risen significantly already, which has ramifications for catastrophe events and possible loss amplification arising from them. So, to help me dive deeper into this issue, I'm delighted to welcome two senior Verisk Analytics executives with years of experience on the claims side of the market. We have Mike Fulton, President of Xactware, and Tom Johansmaer, Head of PCS. Welcome, both of you. Nice to see you.
Thank you for
Likewise,
having
thanks.
us.
So, it's interesting timing for our discussion with the official start of hurricane season this week, and I'm sure we'll talk about that throughout this conversation. But, Mike, I thought maybe we could start with you today. Can you give our audience a bit of background on claims inflationary trends and the kind of inputs there are to this that insurers, reinsurers, and the ILS market should all be concerned about?
Absolutely, Steve, and obviously thanks for having us. Really enjoy these sessions, and I could spend a lot of time on this. In general, I would say we're in new territory. This has not happened in the past, at least in my 30 years plus experience being in this business. But yes, I mean, we are obviously, like you said, seeing inflation in several areas. Some of that is significant. And we certainly expect additional inflationary growth in both material and labor for the near term. I would start off by saying, lumber, both dimensional and panel or plywood OSB, rather, kicked this off last summer with, in some cases, what we had seen in the U.S. were 300 plus percent increases, primarily in OSB or wafer board, as some call it. But then roughly 200% increases in typical dimensional lumber, 2x4s, 2x6s, et cetera. And there were several thoughts on the reasons why, but as it's at its core, it's just simply a supply and demand issue, and specifically related to COVID. Lumber, many may not be aware, some are obviously that have been in the business, but I mean, the lumber production and therefore prices fluctuate seasonally along with demand. Demand is up in the spring due to the ability to build in good weather, and down in the fall due to the slowness of new jobs. And the pandemic, going back a year, a little bit more than a year ago, created both a challenge with the ability to log and produce lumber, meaning due to labor shortages, people being sick, et cetera. It also created an expectation in the market that demand would not be where it normally is in the spring. And that second part really proved to be false, as both new construction continued to grow, and many homeowners, such as us, that were stuck at home, increased the demand as well with their own DIY projects. And as the year continued on, well, as the year that year did continue on, we also saw significant unexpected seasonal growth in new home construction. And I think, again, due to COVID, due in large part to many people wanting to move out of and away from the cities. A large part of the workforce can now work at home. They can work remotely now. I actually heard a news story. This is US based, a few weeks ago, that said there were approximately 40 million more people actively wanting to purchase a home than there were homes to be purchased. So the new construction market, and that's not just US, we're hearing it, really globally for the most part. There's just a significant shortage. Lumber suppliers, going back a year ago, they were hesitant to spin up new mills, because the cost to do so is roughly 100 mil per mill. And they felt this might be a temporary bubble. We're beginning to hear now, interestingly, that logging and milling has started to catch up with demand, but distribution is now a challenge. Just getting it onto trucks and having people to drive those trucks and getting it onto rails and getting it out to the individual areas. We're also, I mean, lumber seems to be the poster child of inflation because that kicked us off. But I mean, we're starting to see significant price increases in steel and other metal goods, plastics and other petroleum-based products such as roof shingles. You know, some is a result of non-COVID-based inflation that we're just seeing, you know, with the cost of a barrel of oil going up, but all is really a result of significant demand that's just outpaced supply. The pressure, I will say that the pressure on new construction has also made it difficult for contractors who specialize in insurance restoration to attract and retain their labor pool. You know, and while in the end, the pandemic is thankfully waning in many areas of the planet, our expectation, like you stated early on, Steve, is that inflation and the availability of materials and labor are really going to continue through this year, at least.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things we notice here in the UK is that if you do want to get a job done on your home, it can be very hard if it's a small job because the builders and construction people want to be working on the bigger projects, which are in abundance right now. And I think that could be an interesting dynamic when something like a storm hits. Tom, given PCS sits a lot closer to the reinsurance and insurance and securities market, perhaps you could explain a little about what's been seen in catastrophe claims that perhaps demonstrates how this inflationary pressure could manifest.
Oh, it's interesting. So we've been getting calls about this for, you know, almost a year now. And the first thing you have to keep in mind with our estimates is we don't break out claim inflation or materials inflation. All of that happens, you know, up to the claims department, right? So when we get the projected ultimate loss reported to us, that is already included in. So if materials pricing goes up or down, we don't see that directly. This is where it's important to look at PCS alongside Xactware, because we'll tell you what the cat's doing. We'll tell you help you understand what your portfolio is doing. But as you dig inside of that, it's the granularity that you see with Xactware, which is literally as close to the risk as you can get, that provides those sorts of insights. Now, we are getting a lot of phone calls, especially right around now, about lumber prices and what it could mean for the coming hurricane season. Now, what I found fascinating in true reinsurance and ILS form is that we started getting those phone calls once people were finished with their June 1st renewals. So, you know, now that you've had your crash, it's time to go out and buy a helmet, right? I say this a lot because our industry keeps doing this a lot. What I find interesting here is that the materials discussion, particularly as Mike laid it out, really sets the stage over the next 4 to 6 weeks for retro. You know, it's always common in Florida to, you know, take what you can on the front end. Right? You just assume based on what you want to assume and what you want to kind of show facing the market. And then you retro out the back the stuff you don't want. I think the issues around that are going to come amplified this year, A, because we've been hearing about the ILW and retro discussion since late April. Normally people start talking about it a couple of weeks before 6/1. This time everyone knew going in they were going to need a lot of ILW protection post 6/1. And we're starting to see that spin up. On top of that, you've got issues around claim inflation and what that could do to ILW performance, not return performance, but, you know, could it accelerate triggering? Is a $10 billion cat not what it used to be? And when you look at materials inflation, how does that manifest on the loss? You know, is a 100% increase in the price of lumber a 10% increase to personal lines on the cat, 5%, 20%? You can't tell just by looking at insurance stuff the way you always have. You need to get more granular, not just to the materials level, but you need to understand what impacted materials mean across the basket of overall materials and labor involved in remediation post-cat, and then how that can affect the specific categories within a PCS loss estimate.
That's a really interesting point, actually, given especially in the retro market, that the submission data is not as detailed anyway as it is in the reinsurance market for starters. So they're perhaps at a bit of a disadvantage when it comes to trying to work out how you would factor up an industry loss based on this kind of claims inflationary pressure. Mike, perhaps we turn to you and maybe you can give us a bit of a view of how Exactware helps companies deal with and gain insights into these sorts of inflationary issues within insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. Our historic focus in our publication of cost data, rate schedules, et cetera, has been strictly to try and stay in the role of a reporter of prices rather than a forecaster of prices. And the reason being is that just due to our position in the marketplace and the widespread use of our cost data, that if we actually start getting into the forecasting business, we can actually cause prices to increase. If we forecast it, that can become self-fulfilling prophecy. We are, however, expanding our focus slightly in this area to ensure that our monthly publication of cost data includes a perishability factor. We've got to, because things are increasing so quickly, we have to ensure that the price that we publish on June 1st is going to be appropriate throughout the coming month. So there is some expectation, obviously, of inflation. More recently, we're even being asked by many of our customers to report on supply chain disruption. I mentioned it relative to just trucking and distribution of lumber, but concrete is being rationed in different areas. And steel, I put in an order for structural steel today. I'm not going to get it probably until September. Those impact the availability of materials, therefore increasing the time in which it takes to repair a structure and therefore impacting the ALE or the additional living expense portion of the claim. Tom mentioned, and you guys started talking about just the percentage or portion of a claim that's related to lumber for that specific area. When you think of new construction, and obviously construction techniques vary. I know in many parts of Europe, masonry construction is quite common here in the U.S. because trees are abundant, and in North America, a lot of is timber frame or what you would call timber frame or just stud work here. But typical new home construction, you can have 10 to 15% of your total home's construction costs be tied up in that lumber package. From a typical claim perspective, it's not so much. Majority of claims are roofing claims, water loss, escape of water, et cetera. So you're probably down in the 3 to 5% range of a typical claim being related to lumber. So just lumber in and of itself, while it might cause some blip and increase in inflationary trends, the ability to get other materials out there and the additional ALE that compounds that cost for an insurer is really expanding claims costs for us. So more to come. We're clearly attempting to tune our processes, though, to meet our customers' needs. And it's, like I said early on, it's new territory. It's really on a day-to-day basis. What do we think is going to be needed, and how can we keep up with that?
Yeah, no, and it's interesting that you mentioned supply chains as well, because obviously that's a factor in other industries too at the moment. Things like semiconductors, that's been widely publicized that there's shortages and countries that are holding on to them and things like that. And I think we're beginning to see that in some of the materials that are going to affect insurers as well. Tom, moving back to you, as costs of things like lumber go up massively, hundreds of percent year on year, how should the reinsurance and ILS market be thinking about hurricane season this year? And I guess, obviously, as usual, we're thinking about the coastal states, the Floridas, the Texases. Should funds and reinsurers be thinking differently about their hedging and portfolio construction with this claims inflation potential in mind?
I don't know if they should be thinking differently on a broad basis. The whole, do I change my mix? Do I change my philosophy? Probably not, but I would look at the details more. I think the details matter more than they ever have. And there have always been problems with the detail portion, right? So taking a step away from Exactware's focus for a second, let's talk about big onshore energy risks. Where do you find them? At ports, right? Texas, Galveston is massive. So there hasn't been enough discussion about large energy or large onshore risk losses from CAT historically. And I think that now is the time to look at that because, you've got increased threat, you've got COVID-related issues, you've got increased cost for remediation. Better to understand that kind of detail. Now bringing it back to my exact words focus, similar situation. People like to live on coasts. Coastal homes are bigger and more expensive because that's what rich people do. that leads to higher claim risk. These are things we have to look at when you're modeling the impact of a hurricane. When you're buying retro, you've got to think about price and you've got to think about replacement cost more than you did before. So I don't think this is an overall sea change in how you look at the risk or how you look at your portfolio, but I do think that you have to start factoring in different types of loss profile per event than you would previously. Mm.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, if we think about cost inflation and availability of supplies, but then the other factor is obviously people as well. And this year we've already had the Texas deep freeze and winter storms, which has driven hundreds and hundreds of thousands of claims. And obviously labor is very tied up in those still, I believe, in that part of the world. And if we think back to sort of the 2017 hurricane season, you had Irma and Harvey, which really made the availability of labor an issue. I mean, Mike, do you think this year we've got quite an active hurricane season forecast again? Are there concerns over the availability of labor should a major storm hit?
Without a doubt. Again, new territory. But when you think of, I guess, the increases in labor costs post-catastrophe are really directly tied to the ability for the local workforce to service those claims. So in a depressed market, when you have not everyone who is able to work actually working, you know, being able to put those folks to work on claims, you see a relative minimal impact in labor. In a boom market where everyone who wants to be working is actually working, that means you have to then bring people in from outside that region to service those claims. So, you know, hurricane hits Central Florida. If you're in a boom market in Central Florida from a new construction perspective, you can bring people in from Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, or even further away. That is, frankly, out the window now because everyone who wants to be working in construction is doing so. So the demand surge on labor could potentially be significant. And I think that's something that the industry is just going to have to be sensitive of. But yeah, I would say if we have a really active storm season, we could see some unprecedented increases in labor.
Interesting. Thank you, Mike. Tom, so you've obviously very close to ILS market participants. And you talk regularly with your clients in that space. How concerned are they about this issue? I know you said you're getting calls about it, but is it something that they're really nervous about this year?
I don't think anybody's really nervous about it, but people are starting to want to understand it, which is a step in the right direction. I mean, I think being nervous about it or being scared or worried or what have you isn't the right approach. I mean, this may be an increased risk, but it's an understandable risk. It's a manageable risk. You know, it's not, if we were talking about a vague threat of increased unmodeled risk throughout the year with no ability or little insight into the underlying cost of that unmodeled risk, yeah, that's a problem because you don't know what's coming and you're guessing and making up factors. This is hurricane, US hurricane, the most maturely modeled risk in the market. And it's well understood, and there's underlying data. You know, the Xactware data that Mike was discussing, you know, really helps you understand at a granular level what could happen if a hurricane hits. And then when it does, it can help you reserve more effectively afterward. So with that in mind, I don't see a lot of reason to worry. I see a lot of reason to get your head in the game, get in front of the risks that are out there, line up your data assets, and make sure that when the wind starts to blow, you're able to take action. I mean, when a hurricane approaches land or initially makes landfall, my phone starts to ring. Hey, what's the number? I need a number. You know, my investors just want a number. But you know what? Come on. We can all do better, especially in this day and age, you know, with the data that Mike's talking about. There's no reason you can't start to understand a hurricane better than ever before from day zero. And what that means is you can manage your book and your capital more effectively. So would I worry? No. Would I get my game plan down? You bet.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And yeah, it's true with all of this data around that is available now to people, they really need to be considering this in their pricing up front. But that still remains a little challenging in a world where these pressures are pretty uncertain still as exactly how they will manifest and how far they might run as well in terms of global inflation. Mike, what do you think the market can do to stay on top of this type of issue and ensure it's accounted for in its pricing and well understood going forwards?
Yeah, I think the key term you use is just understanding that we are in a strange period here, and there's got to be an understanding both on the insurer side and frankly on the policyholder side. I mean that, you know, in a typical post-CAT situation, if I'm giving someone an initial settlement value based to repair their roof today, with the understanding that roof may not be actually repaired for 3 months due to demand surge in labor, and that the cost therefore may be quite different 3 months from now than it is today. There's got to be this understanding between all parties involved that, you know, this is an initial settlement value. We're quite understanding that this may not be appropriate. We're just going to have to stay in communication to make sure that that we can address that on a going forward basis. Many states have put in place in best interest and best intents at heart to say, you know, an insurer needs to provide a settlement check to a policyholder within X number of hours after the loss. And that kind of creates this perception that whatever check I get from you within 72 hours after my loss is all I'm going to get. And we have to be understanding that those things change. I think we, Exactware and Verisk, have got to be a little bit more liberal in our understanding of needing to forecast out a little bit with regard to these trends. I mentioned earlier just tuning our process to put in a perishability factor for the next 30 days. Does that need to expand to 60 or more? Unsure at this point, but I think a key understanding is that we all need to stay tight and stay close just manage it as best as possible. And I would even say those that are working on the sales side of insurers on underwriting new risks, they've got to have that data up front as well to ensure that their coverage A value is going to be appropriate for that loss based upon today's value. There's an interesting, the perception generally is post-CAT, when you see prices increase due to demand surge, that after that demand surge wanes, that those prices will come back down. That's just it's tended to be a misperception. We haven't seen that in the past. I mean, again, you think of the fact of if the local workforce is able to service a claim, you see very minimal increase in labor costs post-CAT. If they're unable and you have to bring local workers in from out of state or out of region, you see demand surge, you see labor prices go up to meet the need. Once the catastrophe has waned and the serviceable repairs have gone down, you're then getting equilibrium between the number of workers in the workforce and the amount of work to be done. So there's not a real reason for prices to decline post-CAT. It really takes some kind of a major disruption or major depression in the industry to start seeing those things happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. That really points to the need to be prepared up front, as you say, at the underwriting of the risk in the first place. And also you mentioned there the timeline of claims payments, and actually that leads on nicely to my next question for Tom. I was going to ask you, given the PCS reports industry losses, do you think these types of inflationary pressures will sort of manifest in the way you report them? Could they take a little longer to finalize losses because of an environment of higher costs and inflation?
The inflationary pressures and higher costs involved, I'd be surprised if they impact timelines, because if you need to fix your roof and it's a big chunky project, you're going to fix your roof, right? You know, the bigger issue will be scarcity of labor or scarcity of materials. But it's not like you're going to delay fixing your roof by a long period of time, you know, because of the cost involved, right? Yeah, especially if you've got an insurer coming to support you. So, you know, that becomes an issue. But I don't think it drags out the process, right? Also, we operate with projected ultimate loss. So even with inflationary pressures and, you know, shortages of labor and materials, insurers still have a pretty good idea of what things are going to cost. You know how much a roof costs if you're an insurer. if you're, you know, one of the, you know, 80 odd percent of the market that works with Exactware, you know what it's going to cost to put that roof up in general. So right away, you have a starting point. You may want to project out a little higher based on certain inflationary pressures or volatility or pricing, because it may take longer to fix that roof. Okay, that's fine. But the notion that you're starting blind, not at all. Let's say it takes 120 days instead of 90 days, making up numbers here, right? Just for hypothetical purposes. It takes 120 instead of 90. Okay. So that adds 33% to your true time to, you know, understand the full loss, right? The repair takes 120 days instead of 90 days. Cool. Let's say the price goes up 5% relative to what you would normally expect from a claim. Okay. So what you're saying is from day zero, it's the delta is not day zero to day 120 full cost difference. It is basic understanding at day zero plus some additional projection based on other factors you know. That the delta of that relative to your actual is a lot smaller than kind of starting from blind and going to fully developed. I know it's a mouthful to put it that way, but the reality is when you think about it in terms of relative delta like that, you realize that the upward pressure both on loss development time and on, you know, unknown claim development, it's really not so bad.
Do you think there's any ramifications for kind of the reporting of losses from cedents that could result in trapping of ILS capital? I mean, you mentioned they're projecting upwards. I guess cedents are going to have to project upwards their sort of forecast for IBNR. Could that have some ramifications in the ILS market, do you think?
It could, right? And obviously, I'm laughing because since 2017, trapping collateral and whether or not such projections are accurate has obviously been a point of contention between the insurance among the insurance, reinsurance, and ILS community, right? Mm-hmm. No secret there. I can't walk down Front Street without somebody asking me about trapped collateral relative to an industry loss. And I will admit, some of the things I'm hearing on the street sound a bit larger than I would have expected. Now, what makes it difficult is, of course, everybody's an interested party, right? So, you know, an ILS fund has a perspective relative to trapped collateral, and an insurer has perspective relative to the projection of the loss. And each is going to advance their own view. And there's merit to both sides. So it's not as simple as these guys are right and these guys are wrong, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be more important. Two things are going to be more important than ever. First off, understanding how you reserve and understanding how your counterparty reserves. You used to be able to be a lot looser. And when you're working with a rated balance sheet, you can still be a little more flexible, right? I'll never forget after Irma, one of my clients was telling me, yeah, you know what? We took the loss advice that were coming in. Yeah, we grossed them up by 20%. Then we doubled them. And then we put a little fudge factor on top of that. And a year later, they're like, and I don't know if it was enough. So the tough part is if you're doing that with an ILS fund, which is collateralized, and they can only use that dollar capital once, oversimplifying, you can't come in that heavy without a reason, right? And that brings me to the second part that's important, is the understanding the underlying data and being able to justify higher than expected or higher than usual reserving. In the event that it's appropriate to do so, I think it's going to be more important than ever to show how. You know, even if you're a reinsurer, talking to a retro provider, a UNL retro or collateralized UNL provider, you can't just go in and say, oh yeah, we take our reserves up 50% to start and then deal with it from there. Well, you know what? That's not necessarily acceptable anymore, or it certainly won't be in 12 to 18 months. You know, more granular data is becoming more easily available. And as that more granular data comes into the market, you're going to have to tell a better story. And you're going to have to show your work. And honestly, I find that to be utterly reasonable.
No, I agree entirely. I think those loss advices are going to have to come with justification and data alongside them, aren't they? Especially as there's more factors related to inflation and involved in loss events. So finally, Mike, from your experience at Exactware and in the industry, what should the market bear in mind about this year's hurricane season, given these inflationary pressures, and I guess also the continued issues we see with social inflationary pressure as well?
Yeah, I think the key, Steve, is just, I mean, we're trying to be somewhat predictable in a very unpredictable time for us. And obviously, if we were good at that, we'd all be much, much more wealthy just in investing in the stock market. But I think staying close, I think understanding that we are all in this together, there's a true partnership between insurers, those that provide the technology to them, the policyholder, frankly, and even the contractor that's doing the repairs. And I think that, you know, everybody has the same desire, and that's to get the homeowner back into their home as quickly as possible to get them made whole. And we just need to make sure that we're working closely with that in mind and with the understanding that things change. We are in a time period where inflation is increasing, you know, without a catastrophe. And that when a catastrophe perhaps does occur, that we are going to see that escalated quite a bit. You mentioned social inflation, which is something historically we just haven't tracked. There's not a great definition for it. Although I would say the supply chain disruption, inability to get materials in a timely fashion or availability of materials could be classified as some type of social inflation. So it's something that we're going to have to try and address as best as possible. But I think the key is just everybody staying close and realizing there's a partnership, there's business to be done, and we're all in this together.
Thank you, Mike. That's a great way to sum up. And I really would echo your sentiment that it's all about the policyholder at the end of the day. And unfortunately, they're the ones who in some cases are going to have to wait to be made whole, given some of the pressures that are going to be seen this year when catastrophes do occur. But look, thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Tom. Great to talk to you both. Great to hear some of your insights on what is a very important subject for the industry at this time.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.